are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
It is Thursday, June 30th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Boris Johnson's Conexit will not be the head of the Conservative Party, will not be Prime Minister, will not be even running. Also on the program today, Trump in more hot water. His institute, as opposed to his university, charged for plagiarizing stuff that supposedly came from him. Also about that $45 million loan forgiveness, not so quick. And it turns out that Jesus also changed his mind about Trump. It's not clear he's a reborn. Meanwhile, Puerto Rico, Senate bill passes, ostensibly to help them out. But the bill is a mess. We'll give an update on the platform, all that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. You may have guessed at this point that Matt is not here today. Don't roll your eyes, Michael. It's just the music is a little bit... The relationship between the music and my voice is a little bit different. So put the music down. It's always fun to see Michael get criticism because what he does is he yawns. You get it? You have a yawning.
I also roll my eyes at you as well.
No, you do roll your eyes, but that's classic. But the yawning thing is I don't think you're conscious of. I think that is sort of like more of a...
Well, it's just a sort of a response of exhaustion and boredom. Same material.
It's weird, though, how it comes up so quickly. I just don't... I think it's like it's a complete... it's just an interesting... You're half doing it there. Oh, my God. All right, folks. Michael's working the board today. That's going to be a little bit...
And yawning. Fun.
Yes. No, but it's also the yawn stretch like that.
Yep.
All right, folks. So let's get into this. Boris Johnson got completely little-fingered, as Michael said. I don't know if that's appropriate. But he... That's a Game of Thrones reference. But he... I guess he did give a speech. In a speech in London, billed as a campaign launch, Mr. Johnson said he did not believe he could provide the leadership or unity needed in ruling himself out for the next to be the next conservative leader and prime minister. It comes just a day after Justice Secretary and fellow Brexit campaigner Michael Gove's surprise announcement that he... I guess earlier this morning, would run for leader. Gove apparently outmaneuvered him and got something like 40 MPs to immediately jump on Gove's bandwagon. Pretty stunning turnabout that the guy who was pushing for Brexit ultimately ends up being the guy who will not be in a position to execute that vote. And there's some question as to whether or not we'll actually see Great Britain exit the EU. Certainly the Germans want them to, because the Germans want to be the sole power or the most prominent power in the EU. I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this more as we go on. But just to remind you, we are not going to have live shows for the next week or so. I mean, basically week. We're going to be pre-taping tomorrow's show this afternoon with Cliff and I, and we'll also have an interview that Michael did with Steve Cook from Foreign Policy the Council on Foreign Relations on the attacks in Istanbul. That will be available for everybody tomorrow. And then next week, no show on July 4th. We will have all new material on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week, plus for members, deep archive picks from Matt's deep archive vault. Next week's interviews include Pamela Lewis, a New York-based teacher and activist, Andrew Basevich, Catherine Eden, who writes on poverty. So next week should be an interesting week for our listeners. I'm not quite clear what's going to happen on Friday, but we will figure something out. Could be a found audio show that Matt puts together. Could be a live show that I do from a bunker. We will see. But let's get to today. So I went and gave a little a talk last night about the state of the election, and it is, as every day passes, it is becoming more and more clear that what a train wreck the Donald Trump campaign is, and the utter chaos it's causing within the Republican Party, which is not to say that the Republicans won't continue to control state houses and probably Congress following this election, but it is rather enjoyable. Here is Senator Mike Lee, and this is what is sort of amazing about this. They are so terrified of Donald Trump's voters, in other words, their own Republican base, that they have to leave the door open, even when Donald Trump has just gone beyond the pale. So in other words, what they're saying is he's gone beyond the pale, but he hasn't really gone beyond the pale. I think you'll understand my point when you hear Steve Malzberg on the Steve Malzberg show on Newsmax TV. Interviewing Senator Mike Lee from Utah. And recall that Hillary Clinton is leading in Utah by 4 or 5 points in the latest polls. I don't know if that will be sustainable, but I don't know. Has there ever been a time where Utah has voted for a Democratic president?
Certainly not in the modern political era.
All right, here is Steve Malzberg.
You know, trumpeting Trump.
Hey, look, Steve, I get it. You want me to endorse Trump.
Well, I don't understand why you're not, really.
Really well.
Yeah.
We can get into that if you want. I mean, we can get into the fact that he accused my best friend's father of conspiring to kill JFK. We can go through the fact that he's made some statements that some have identified correctly as religiously intolerant. We can get into the fact that he's wildly unpopular in my state, in part because my state consists of people who are members of a religious minority church, a people who were ordered exterminated by the governor of Missouri in 1838. And statements like that make them nervous. Now, look, these things are not something that I couldn't get over if I heard the right things out.
Wait, what? These things are not things that I couldn't get over if I heard the right things out of his mouth. Like, I don't know. Let's see what they could be.
But if you want to go to why it is I have concerns, I can go on if you'd like.
Well,
I hope I can get over these concerns. I hope Mr. Trump can help me identify them. But don't sit here and tell me, Steve, that I have no reason to be concerned about Donald Trump.
Now, let's try and contemplate what Donald Trump could say. He could say your friend's dad didn't try and kill JFK. He just accidentally killed JFK.
He was at the planning parties where Joe Pesci was cross-dressing in that bad wig. I mean, you saw the Oliver Stone movie. You know all the gay people in New Orleans with the Cubans and the CIA that killed Kennedy? Ted Cruz's dad was at the parties, but he wasn't at the Grassy Knoll or anything. I mean, look, it's totally forgivable.
Maybe Trump could come out and say that he is not going to order all Mormons to be executed. He could say that.
Mormons are generally white, so I'm not really talking about them, Mike. I mean, you're being a little paranoid.
Well, again, I'm not going to tell you anything. I was asking you. I wasn't telling you. To me, the concerns that you should have about Hillary Clinton would dwarf, most of, if not all, in my view, I can't speak for you, of what you just said. She's under FBI investigation. She takes monies from countries that kill gays, that treat women like garbage. We know about the email scandal. The list goes on. The Clinton Foundation.
She takes money. I guess he's talking about the Clinton Global Initiative. It's really impressive because Steve Malzberg has such a long history of promoting LGBT issues and promoting equal rights for women. He's been a stalwart on those issues.
The conflict of interest, the corruption, the lifelong corruption. It goes on and on and on. And the first thing on your list was, again, with all due respect, he said that my best friend's father, killed Kennedy or was involved in it. So I hope it's not personal.
Right. He said that. He actually
all right,
said that.
But that's
he
your...
He said that without any scintilla, without a scintilla of evidence. Now, that concerns me. Again, I hope I can get over this because I can't vote for Hillary. I know there's no possibility of that. What I am saying is that Donald Trump can still get a lot of votes from a lot of conservatives like me, but I would like some assurances on where he's going to stand his ground. I'd like assurances that he is going to be a vigorous defender for the U.S. Constitution, that he's not going to be an autocrat, that he's not going to be an authoritarian, that he's not somebody who's going to abuse a document to which I've sworn an oath to uphold and protect and defend. I'm sorry, sir, but that is not an unreasonable demand.
Okay, sure. I understand, and I appreciate the back and forth, sir. And
I want to make sure that Donald Trump will not physically rape the Constitution.
Just go with it.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I have to do
it. It's just amazing that you have, granted it is Utah, and that's the only reason why. And despite the fact, imagine, Utah is turning its back on Donald Trump, and still Mike Lee is afraid. He's afraid to come out and say, I'm not going to support this guy. I'll vote for, Gary Johnson or whomever. He's afraid to even do that.
Dude, I killed JFK. I was in Dillon. I killed him.
Oh, my God.
Did he intentionally call Ted Cruz his best friend twice, or was it just once?
No, Ted Cruz is one of his best friends.
No, it's his best friend. He's on the record.
BFF.
Friend. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I think Malzberg's awesome. That was amazing. He was just whatever. Look, he's really mean to gay people. Can't we all get behind supporting them and women?
Unbelievable.
That's really why I got into politics. That's why I'm at Newsmax.
Couple of things I wanted to pick up on from yesterday. Well, actually, just one thing I didn't get a chance to get to this with Ian Millhiser yesterday in our talk about the Supreme Court. I'm doing a lot of house cleaning today, folks. A couple of stories I wanted to get to. But this one was actually a tip by, who was it? Not Lawyer Matthew.
Lawyer Andrew?
Lawyer Andrew. Gave me this tip, and I read up on it. It's fascinating. You know that the Supreme Court is petitioned to take many cases over the course of a year, and they will decide what cases they take based upon whether or not they feel that they have an agenda to move the law in a certain direction, or if there's some clear questions about that need to be addressed. Also, when there is a circuit court split, the Supreme Court almost always takes a case in that instance. The circuit court, of course, is the appellate court that precedes a case going to the Supreme Court. And the circuits are organized, roughly speaking, three or four states, five states per circuit. And there was a split on the circuit courts. between the Seventh Circuit and the Second, Eighth, and Fifth Circuits. And that is a case called Lewis v. Epic Systems Corp. So in other words, the Seventh Circuit held in this case that a company's arbitration agreement for their employees, which prohibits employees from participating in any class, collective, or representative proceeding, in other words, a class action suit, violated the employee's right to engage in concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act. The National Labor Relations Board had ruled this in the past, but this is the first time a circuit court has agreed with the National Labor Relations Board's interpretation or position, I should say. And so basically what this means is when you get take a job somewhere, if your employee has been ripping you off in some concerted way, and in this case, Lewis versus Epic Systems Corp., Lewis, a technical writer, found or sued his employer in a court in Wisconsin on behalf of himself and other technical writers, alleging that the company had violated the Fair Labor Standards Act by misclassifying and depriving them of overtime. So this is a wage theft case. And the way a company like this, a large company, hopes to deal with it is to say, okay, we'll take your individual case to arbitration so that none of the other employees that we have or people that are working for us, because sometimes they will misclassify them, will know about it. You'll go to arbitration. You'll probably have an NDA afterwards, and you won't be able to sue us en masse so that we have to change our policies. Like, we don't mind paying off a one-time, one employee to get rid of them in an arbitration settlement. But if we have to change our business practices, well, then we can't continue to exploit and rip off our workers in a large enough fashion that it actually is a business model. And this is the first time a court, circuit court, has signed on to the National Labor Relations Board's ruling. And so there's a very good chance it's going to go to the Supreme Court in the next session. And again, there's two things here that I raise, just so that we can just flag this. I mean, one, again, it shows the importance of the Supreme Court in issues that we don't even contemplate. I mean, it has been calculated. There are literally billions upon billions, hundreds of billions of dollars that labor is losing. It's literally just having wage theft, is subject to wage theft across the country. And a big part of the reason is the fact that there's no opportunity to get companies to change their policies because you can't bring class action suits. And then the other aspect of this is somebody appoints people to the National Labor Relations Board. And there is a huge difference between the idea of Barack Obama appointing commissioners to the National Labor Relations Board and Mitt Romney, just as there will with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And so I just wanted to flag that. I mean, one, because I think the case is going to be really fascinating. And two, just because it shows the relevance of all this. Never mind who puts people on the Seventh Circuit and appoints federal judges. So important to note. Another thing that just, got my goat. The other day, we had primaries in New York State. Now, the New York primary system is just, I have no idea what is behind this. I mean, it's clearly, and someone feels that it's in their best interest to suppress the vote in some fashion, and I'm not quite clear who or why. But in New York State, we have three separate primaries. We had a primary for the presidential race for the Democratic Party. We had a primary, and that was, I don't know, about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. Tuesday, we had a primary for the federal office for Congress. And then, I think it's in September, we have a primary for statewide offices. It's absurd. I imagine it is because the statewide people feel like it's going to be to their benefit to not have the national race involved in this. Like, we're going to isolate this primary. I'm not exactly sure what's behind it. And I haven't read anybody who's written about it. But so there were two candidates in New York who were endorsed by Bernie Sanders. One of them was Zephyr Teachout. She won a landslide victory in New York's 19th district, which remains my voting district. And this is a district, more or less, where when she challenged Governor Cuomo for the Democratic Party nomination, she won huge there. In fact, Columbia County, the heart of that district, I think was where she did the best in the entire state. And she won, you know, about 30% of the vote, I think it was, against Cuomo, really crushing his hopes to be considered a national candidate, or at least, I don't know if it crushed his hopes, but probably the more reasonable people around him. And so she was running against a very good candidate, actually, a local guy. Zephyr Teachout had moved in there. There was some concern that would she be considered a carpetbagger. That may play out in the general, but she's certainly not unknown to the district, and she's certainly not been district shopping. So she won her election, like I say, by a landslide. But there was another candidate that Bernie Sanders backed, a guy named Eric Kingston, and he's a Social Security expert. In fact, I feel like we may have interviewed him at one point, time or another. And he was running in New York's 24th district, and he lost by 17 points to Colleen Deakin. She was the candidate favored by the DCCC. I'm not sure if the DCCC got terribly involved in the 19th district, but nevertheless, when Sanders stumped in Syracuse, he had told voters that that with just 7 or 8,000 votes, Kingston would get nominated. The 24th district was won by Bernie Sanders with 18,000 votes. So if this candidate, Kingston, got about a little bit more than a third of Bernie Sanders' votes, he would have won. Well, on Tuesday night, he got just 3,700 votes. Most eligible voters didn't care enough to come out for the primary. Now, you know, like I say, I barely knew there was another primary. I mean, I realized that when I went to go vote for the presidential primary and there's only two candidates there and there's no other races. And I was like, well, someone's got to be running for Congress. But it's pretty astounding that when you think about what was happening in the sort of like, and look, I don't know how many listeners we have in New York's 24th district. I would imagine 4, maybe 10. I have no idea. But these are the type of races where supporters of Bernie Sanders should be coming out and making the extra effort. I mean, I think about the tremendous amount of effort expended on the notion of California only being won by Hillary Clinton by 3 or 4 percentage points, as opposed to 9 percentage points. A wholly irrelevant distinction. Wholly irrelevant. and the amount of energy. Now, I get it, because for a lot of people, it provided some sense of outrage. Some people, it provided a certain sense of getting clicks and whatnot. But, I mean, this is the whole point. If you don't get other progressive members, other progressive legislators, like, there's nothing that could be done. This is how you build a movement. I mean, if you're going to be concerned with electoral politics, this is the kind of electoral politics you should be concerned about. It's just aggravating. You know, we saw this in Nevada, too. Lucy Flores. She was another Sanders endorsee. But and a lot of people consider her a flawed candidate. But Kingston was fairly competitive with Deacon in fundraising, even before Sanders supporters had, or even before Bernie Sanders had endorsed him. So there was a real opportunity here, but people just didn't show up. I mean, you had 18,000 people voting for Bernie Sanders. You couldn't even get 6,000 to come out during this other primary. There's, you know, that is indicative of the problem that the Democratic Party has. And because the Democratic Party is really the only vehicle at this juncture to promote and push progressive policies, that's the reason why we have off-year elections become a disaster. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is, but don't send me another email about how come you're not covering the fact that the gap is closed in California, and after they counted the extra 2 million ballots, that she only won by 3 percentage points.
If you don't cover my wife's fraud and theft in California, those other races don't matter.
Honestly, I mean, that is... that is
3 percentage point margin, and she killed the rest of them. So actually, if you can count in the mass murder, Bernie actually won by 15 points in California.
You know what?
Covering for him.
Even if he had won by 15 points, it wouldn't have changed the distribution.
That's not true, because if you tabulate the other voters who were oppressed in other races, who were independents, who didn't get proper ballot access, when you aggregate those numbers with the voter fraud and ballot access in Ohio, he won the whole thing by a landslide. Look up the facts.
I do want to talk about two wins that were pretty exciting. In Utah, Senator Mike Lee, who we just heard from, who is not going to support Donald Trump because he said his best friend's dad tried to kill JFK.
At least he didn't say his best friend was the Zodiac killer.
I don't know what is funnier about that. The sort of the construction that Mike Lee presents it in that way, or the fact that Donald Trump actually did do that.
No, the best part is that it's like, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Right. Or the fact that Donald Trump was right.
How does he know?
So Mike Lee will face Misty Snow. She is the first, the Democratic primary winner. She's the first transgender nominee from a major party to run for a U.S. Senate seat in U.S. history. And, however, there is another transgender woman who, I guess, sort of is tied for being the first transgender person to run for Congress. So they're both running for Congress, but Misty Plowright, a transgender woman from Colorado's 5th House District, is running for that seat as well. So, and I don't know. I mean, I think these are both very tough races, but I think the bottom line is that, you know, this is impressive, at least. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's going to help on some level with the project of having transgender people be accepted in our society. We have some obstacles to that, of course, and that being the Republican Party. Now that marriage equality is the law of the land, I mean, it seems, I mean, it's been, what now, a couple of years, and it seems like it is that it's unbelievable how little salience the issue of marriage equality has now in our politics, at least in terms of trying to the Republicans trying to use it to drive their vote. I mean, it's stunning. The only person left, I think, talking about it is Brian Fisher from, you know, when you go into the fever swamps of the right-wing fundamentalists, you'll still hear them. But in terms of transgender people, in terms of allowing children to express their gender identity as they have in a way that they feel comfortable with, which invariably comes after years of, I would imagine, difficulty in coming to that awareness. Here is Laura Ingraham. Just, I mean, and in general, I mean, let's face it. Laura Ingraham is a vile person. And she proves this on a regular rolling basis. And here she is. There's such a, you know, it's unbelievable. And it's fascinating to me, too, because, you know, people want to know where did Donald Trump come from? Well, I mean, just listen to right-wing radio. Here is Laura Ingraham. From just yesterday's program, talking about the transgender bathroom access scandal that you know is on everyone's lips. I mean, as if you walk around the country, everyone is so concerned about this. I mean, but no, that's actually not true. It's just the abnormal people are really concerned about it because of people like Laura Ingraham.
New transgender update for you as well. New transgender news for all of you who are bathroom goers and use public restrooms. I think a lot of people are going to be walking around with just depends on from now on. They're just not going to use the bathroom. They're going to adult diapers. Now, diapers for everybody. No one's going to be going to the bathroom. If you have little kids, there's going to be no bathrooms. We're just going to all wear depends. Then we can still, everyone's just be happy. Then you'll be in your own bathroom. Yeah, everyone's bathroom is just their own clothes. Okay, so this is what we're going to go to. 855-40-LAURA.
855-40-LAURA.
That's disgusting.
Well, I mean, the
just
idea
on
is...
on a very basic level.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the... It's a bad joke, but the basis of that joke, for you to find it funny, means that you really have to have a warped mentality.
Oh, incredible abnormality, like you were saying.
Yeah.
That somehow a logical response to your incredible phobia and bigotry is to want to wear
well,
it depends?
No, that's not even the point. The point is just that you have that incredible phobia. Like that you're actually walking around thinking about the times that I go to a public bathroom and I go into the stall. The idea that there could be a transgender person in the stall next to me is just so overwhelming that it would be hilarious if we all wore depends.
The like, cooties it's just, principle.
It's just so revealing of how effed up the mentality on the right is and how desperate it is.
Can I just throw out an alternative theory?
Sure.
Perhaps she already has to wear depends and she just is trying to normalize it.
Oh, well, that's possible.
Yeah.
Shrewd. That's a shrewd take.
That's the one I
believe in that completely. That's exactly where that joke came from.
It's very possible.
Thank you.
No doubt. I nailed it.
He's convinced now.
I have very rarely been as convinced by a piece of sort of psychoanalytic conspiracy theorizing about a right-wing talker in the show as I was by that one.
You know, I'll start to take phone calls at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. I guess I got disconnected. I wonder why that's happening lately. 646-257-3920. We do have somebody on the line. I'll try and call in and get to them. There's still major fallout from Benghazi. Oh, do we have that Howie Carr thing?
You have that one.
I do?
Yeah. But I can get it if you
want. Hold on. I think I... Wait a second. Where is it?
I got it.
Okay. Yeah, let's play this and then I'll go to the phones. So... I gave this talk last night about the state of the election to some folks, and I basically had talked about what, you know, that juxtaposition that we had talked about the other day on the program, where you had Hillary Clinton out with Elizabeth Warren, and they are slamming Donald Trump, and Elizabeth Warren can do this with a tremendous amount of credibility because she's doing it from a place where it cuts against her grain a little bit. I mean, she does it very comfortably, but there's no doubt that she could take Donald Trump into any policy argument about anything and drown him in seconds. Hillary Clinton, I would argue the same way, but Elizabeth Warren, I mean, she made her bona fides were made not being a politician, but being a professor and then an advocate on bankruptcy law. I mean, so she knows this stuff. So that when she calls, you know, Donald Trump goofy, which I think is a sort of a very Midwestern thing to do on some level. Yeah, I know he called her that, but you know, when she says it, it just sounds not as sort of,
oh, the poor dear.
Yeah, exactly. And so you contrast that with Donald Trump's response to this stuff, where he gets Scott Brown, a two-time loser, someone who had lost to Elizabeth Warren, to come out and call for a DNA test so that she can prove that she is or is not part Native American. And you see, like, that's a sign of a campaign that's losing, that they're attacking with that level of desperation. And by desperation, I mean something that resonates only with people on the right. The vast majority of people who know who Elizabeth Warren is would have no idea what the hell they're talking about. But everybody on the right does. And so much so that you get this type of thing. Howie Carr, who was, I think the last time we heard from him, he was interviewing Scott Brown, a Boston AM talk radio host up in Maine, introducing Governor LePage, that lunatic who was had to be corrected by his own advisors that he could not call for the assassination of a county sheriff or something. Who, I mean, the guy is a lunatic. And so here's Howie Carr. Listen to how Howie Carr references Elizabeth Warren. And understand, this is a grown man.
I heard Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren campaigning. You know Elizabeth Warren, right?
Unbelievable.
Elizabeth Warren said. Or maybe it was Hillary.
All right. We don't even need to hear Carr. So you have a grown man here. Now, understand what they're trying to say with this, right? They're trying to say that this is a classic case of the Democrats trying to use race, trying to play the race card, but also being hypocritical because she's not even Native American. Or we don't think she's Native American. She doesn't look Native American enough. But it's just it's basically their way of saying, like, look at how racist she is. And let me articulate that by doing this.
Total insensitivity to Native Americans.
I mean,
like Elizabeth Warren went to Harvard and she was like, I learned from the Eastern wind that bankruptcy law, not good for middle class.
It's
See what they're like. They're so racist.
It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. They are spiraling down. It's like, honestly, to watch this, it's just like watching someone saying, like, I am going to bask in the sunlight by digging straight into the planet and trying to come out the other side. I'm going to go get a suntan, but first I'm going to dig my way through the planet and pop out on the other side of the Earth. That's what's happening to the right now, and I'm enjoying it. Let's go to the phones. You're calling from a 386 area code. Who's this?
Hey there. I wish I had something more topical to talk about. It's what you guys were actually talking about right now, but I was wondering if I could ask Michael Brooks a question or two about something. 3 months ago, he had a debate with Sargon of Akkad, which I thought was really well handled by him.
Okay.
And
what do you want?
He was about to say some things I thought really interesting, and I certainly would never call anyone a member of the regressive left, but I would call myself a new atheist, and you know, I would also call Sam Harris a poor man's ineloquent, you know, a Christopher Hitchens. But I was wondering, how do you consolidate anti-theism or maybe strong secularism with kind of the Al Jazeera ideology that you were about to say? Like, you were trying to explain, like, a good policy measure for combating terrorism and Islamic fundamentalism, but he really didn't give you the chance to do so. And I was actually really interested to hear your political theory on the situation and if it consolidates or represents new atheists in that.
I don't think it probably doesn't consolidate new atheists, because I have a different politics than most new atheists. I mean, even Christopher Hitchens supported the invasion of Iraq. But that's a really interesting question. I know this is a very long delay, but could you call back on July 11th when we are back from break and I am hosting, and I will go into do that in depth with you. And meanwhile, on the
3 YouTube, months, you can wait another 2 3 weeks.
Months, yeah. I mean, and then on the YouTube channel, the Majority Report YouTube channel, and on our archives, I've done a couple of conversations with Omar Aziz, where I think we sort of get into that terrain in any conversation I've had with Juan Cole. But if you call back, I'll absolutely go into it with you. I just can't sort of get into it right now logistically. Thanks for the call, though.
Yeah. All right, so July 11th?
Monday, July 11th, I will take...
We're going on vacation.
We're going on vacation next week, but if you call, I'll be back on that Monday. I'll be hosting. Give a call, and I'll definitely get into it with you.
Definitely interested to hear what you...
Okay, thank you.
Definitely interested to hear what you have to say, because as a new atheist, I'm trying to consolidate this and not just come out as someone who doesn't understand what they're talking about. And I feel like not enough liberals like you are kind of given the platform to have... the means of communicating that.
Well, that's definitely true.
So I would like to talk to you on that.
All right. Appreciate the call.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Bye-bye. Oh, he sounded reasonable.
He sounded very smart.
Let's go to a 314 area code. Who's this?
Hey, this is Reese.
Hello, Reese. What's on your mind?
I don't know if you guys are going to cover this, but Ed Rendell was on MSNBC yesterday. Mm. They asked him again about Liz Warren and if she was qualified to be president. And the response he basically gave was, we can't have two women on the ticket. And
he's migrated from, well, she doesn't have the foreign policy chops to be to come right in as a president the day after. I mean, he's changed his tune a little bit.
Remember the voice, the Harvey Fierstein impression, where it's just like, she's not qualified. Now it's like, I'm not qualified either.
I mean, she's not qualified, but I'm not qualified either. Thanks for letting me call back in.
All right, let's give this a try.
So what else did he say?
But I don't really agree with that assessment, although I don't think she's going to pick Warren to be on the ticket. I think she should, but I don't think she will. I think we're going to end up with the boring guy. I forget his name, but
Tim Kaine.
It's just Rachel Maddow did a thing about there are three types of candidates. One you pick for August, you need to unify the party, one for November to win the election, or one for January to govern. And it seems like the party has started to unify. Yeah. So I think she picks Kaine to try to win in November instead of Warren to appeal to the Sanders voters who are coming over anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, look, let me just say this, is that I think that Elizabeth Warren would only go on the ticket if she got a portfolio, a specific portfolio. In other words, like she had the opportunity to sort of, I don't know, function in a quasi-regulatory way. Like, in other words, oversee, you know, certain regulatory agencies in the area in which she's interested. And I find it hard to believe that any president would cede that. Now, maybe if Clinton felt like that, you know, maybe against a different candidate, or maybe if she was concerned that people weren't unifying, you're right, maybe she would concede to something like that. But I think, you know, for right now, for Elizabeth Warren and for Clinton, it's win-win for both of them. And she's getting strengthened and Clinton's getting strengthened by it. And I suspect it might be Kane, but understand what Ed Rendell is doing. He is trying to tamp that down. I mean, that's, you know, he's out there with an agenda, and probably with an agenda from, you know, I mean, he's a Clinton surrogate. And so when he's out there doing that, they are conscious that there is a strong desire to have Warren on the ticket. And he's trying to downplay that. And I mean, that's basically what's going on. So I think, yeah, Tim Kaine is possible. I just think that the vice president is overrated from an electoral standpoint. You know, stepping into the role as president is pretty important myself. But I think Elizabeth Warren or Tim Kaine could step into that role. I don't know if I... Tim Kaine's politics are not great in my perspective, but
well. I'm still hoping for the dark horse, Ed Rendell. But
right, I appreciate the call, Kelly. What did you?
I think it's absolutely preposterous that you, not you, everyone on this show hasn't said at any point that I've heard yet that a two-woman ticket is out of the question. It's completely 100% out of the question.
You think it's out of the question?
Absolutely.
What do you mean out of the question? I do not want it. What do you mean by out of the question? You mean like Hillary Clinton would never do it? Or you think that it would lose because it's too women?
That would be the stupidest move. First of all, I don't think the vice president, Elizabeth Warren, is much more useful in the Senate. So that would be unfortunate. I think it would satisfy a lot of Bernie people. And, you know, maybe make some really good things happen. But people hate women, everyone. I don't know if you have noticed this, but we've never had a female president. So
what?
Even that is going one step further. Two women on the ticket, that it's just flat out
so you think
the stupidest thing.
I would be
so angry.
So your argument is that there are misogynists out there who can handle one woman at the top of the ticket, but to have two women would be just two women.
Yeah, anybody.
I think that they can barely even handle.
Well, but that's my point. I think the question is like, what is the margin? What is the delta between people who won't vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, and people who will vote for Hillary Clinton despite the fact that she's a woman? But if she has two women, that's one woman too far.
I think it's probably bigger than you think.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible.
I mean, it's just when it comes to this stuff, working here has given me just a tiny little insight into
the male mentality.
No, into how
not working with you, it won't.
No, it not nothing to do with you guys, but into how much more aggression and.
Oh, I know what you're saying. Because you
negativity.
Read 14-year-olds' comments on YouTube. Those people are not voting
you bitch!
It.
Bob! Meatloaf!
No, and I read more about what other females who... I mean, I'm not famous. I'm just barely public. So, I've gotten some negativity. But then it's made me more aware of what other women... go through, and it's just not comparable to men. So to have a two two-woman ticket, it just makes my head want to explode because I underestimated how much people are willing when they're given anonymity to tear women apart.
Yeah, I mean, if Donald Trump were a different person, I mean, I think that there would be something. I think that would have more. That would be more of an issue. I'm not convinced that there is a. Do I think it would be a liability having two women on the ticket? Yes. Do I think it would be a significantly larger liability than having one woman on the ticket? No. I think it would be. I think. Let me put it this way: if Joe Biden was out there today, it would be a slam dunk that Hillary Clinton would pick Joe Biden just to offset the fact that she's a woman. and Tim Kaine is going to offer sort of a similar thing to that. And I don't know, frankly, how to measure what that difference is between one woman and two women. But it certainly makes sense to me that in the Clinton campaign, they have a similar concern. And so a guy like Tim Kaine would make more sense to them. But I also think that, I think Hillary Clinton is enough to scare off the misogynists. And I could also make an argument that having two women on there, I actually think there were a lot of people who voted for Barack Obama to establish to themselves that they are not racist, and to establish to their friends that they are not racist. And on some level, I think you could, it's easier for a misogynist to say, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton because I just don't like her. But if you have two women, it might put some of those people on the spot on some level. I mean, and I'm thinking about people I know who, because I think for particularly men over a certain age, from the age of 50, probably to 75, Hillary Clinton represents a resent that they probably feel from going through the women's liberation movement on some level, where Hillary Clinton reminds them of their first wife or of, a woman who sort of got where she got off the back of the work of her husband. And that's why she's where she is and represents all that they felt that they lost on some level that they have not been able to articulate, and that they did lose. Men of that age grew up with certain promises based upon the generation before them, and it wasn't there. They just watched it walk away from them. And I'm not in any way being an apologist for them. I'm trying to explain it. And so I think that's where a lot of that comes from. And frankly, I think it's you have to confront that a lot more if there's two women on the ballot.
And let me just add one distinction to this, that I think I agree with you that the people who are really just sort of out and out straight up misogynists, I mean, first of all, not only are they not going to vote for Hillary Clinton, they're also overwhelmingly likely to be Republican if they're actually making that type of voting decision to begin with. But the second point is that this has been a problem in this campaign, that of course some of what Hillary faces is sexism, but also a lot of people just have very serious and very, very, very well-reasoned reservations and distaste for her, which would in fact put them more on the spot with Elizabeth Warren for some of the reasons that Sam is talking about, because the policy sets are different and the record is different. And then that would change the conversation. But I agree with you.
I don't think they're going to end up picking.
Yeah. I don't think
it's going to happen.
You're totally convinced it's Tim Kaine. 90%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm 75%. But there's, it's a very hard thing to measure how that works. Everybody was saying in October of 2000 or September of 2008, there's a hidden vote out there against Barack Obama.
And if there ever was a hidden vote, a guy named Barack Hussein Obama would be tapping into that vote. I mean, that is quite
but
then,
no,
a bridge
that,
to
that
cross.
It's not showing up in the polls.
Yeah, I understand.
It's not showing up in the polls that people are going to vote against him. They're saying that they will because he's black. But I definitely think that for those for as many people who would change their vote from I'm going to vote from Hillary to Hillary to I'm not going to vote for Hillary because Elizabeth Warren's on the ticket. I think there are just as many who will be like would go the other direction. But I don't know how you prove that.
It's the opposite of that old Eddie Murphy routine where he said white people would get in the booth and get drunk and vote for Harold Washington as a joke. And that's how he became mayor of Chicago.
All right. We got to take a quick break. Go into the fun half. Folks, a reminder for you freebies. Well, we're going to record a show for tomorrow. So I'll wish you a happy 4th of July on that during that program. But a reminder, it is your membership that makes this show possible. We cannot do this show without your help. So if you have the financial means, and if you don't, again, email us at, well, the best place to email us now, actually, is at members@majority.fm. If you need help with membership, everything else can go to majorityreporters@gmail.com. But if you need help with membership, if you have any problems with your account, technical problems, or you don't have the finances to access the fun half, but you want to, please email us there, members@majority.fm. But if you do have the means, please, we lose members almost every day because of financial issues that crop up in people's lives. So if you're one of those people who are fortunate enough to not have those issues and you enjoy the program, by all means, support it. And help us grow and continue and all that fun stuff. Also, you can also support the program by getting coffee. Yes, fair trade coffee, tea or chocolate. JustCoffee.coop. Get 10% off by using the coupon code MAJORITY. And if you buy crap from Amazon, the least you can do, buy it through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. Don't like Amazon? Try Jet.com at MajorityReportKickback.com. You click on those links, you bookmark it, you buy your stuff through there, and we get a kickback. All right, quick break. We got a bunch of callers on the line. We got a bunch of IMs. We'll be right back after this.
We take one. La poupée qu'il fait non.
Fuck off.
She says no, 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 no. I give her my heart. She says no, 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 no. 'Cause you're only afraid to leave. Only a brother to. Ask her to walk with me. She shakes her head at me. She's a pretty little doll who says no, 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 no. All the night time through, she says no. Ask her to walk with me. Why can't she ever say she's says you're only afraid to lose me. Only a brother to me. She's a pretty doll. She says no, 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 no. All the night time through, she says no, 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 no. If I ask her to